So that's the title of my talk. And I'm going to talk about work in collaboration with Agnes Schmidt-May and Michael von Strauss, who are students, and Rachel Rosen, who is now at Columbia. And I will mostly focus on the papers in blue, but I will also very briefly review the content from other papers. Okay, that's the outline of the talks. I will first review linear and nonlinear massive and passive spin 2 fields. I will be brief here because yesterday Claudia and Shinji talked in some detail about this stuff, especially the historical developments. So I will be rather brief on that. Then I will talk about Gauss free bimetric theory, which is the main subject of my talk. I will discuss its mass spectrum, not for the purpose of discussing the mass spectrum itself, but because this gives us tools that we need later. And then I will discuss the notion of partial masslessness. I never see the... Do you see anything? The microscopic point. Yeah. Then I will discuss the notion of partial masslessness in bimetric theory. I will briefly review conformal gravity and discuss the connection between the two. And then I will tell you that there is a construction in bimetric theory which essentially proves the existence of this partial massless symmetry to any order in a perturbative expansion. Okay, so let's start the review. Okay. So we are all familiar with the linear Fierce-Pauli theory. So given a spin 2 field H mu nu, a linear spin 2 field in a background G bar, then this is the equation which describes the dynamics of this massive field. The mass of the spin 2 field is M Fierce-Pauli squared, and it lives in a background G bar, which can in principle also have a cosmological constant lambda. This is the unique linear theory of a massive spin 2 field, which is Gauss free. It was formulated long ago. It propagates five modes in four dimensions, which correspond to a massive spin 2 field. And once given this theory, you may ask several questions. First of all, is it a theory of massive gravity? And Claudia and Shinji talked in detail about this yesterday. The second question is, what determines this background metric G bar here, in which the field H mu propagates? Generically, one takes this background metric to be flat or de Sitter or under de Sitter, et cetera. So is there a mechanism to actually determine this metric? And of course, the important question is, what are the nonlinear generalizations of this theory? Okay. Yeah. Now, what do we mean by nonlinear generalizations? We mean a theory which, first of all, has an Einstein-Hilbert term. This will give you massless gravity if this was the only term present in the action. But then we have an interaction term for the matrix, which is a polynomial. However, given a matrix alone, you cannot construct polynomials. So you need another, you need a second rank 2 tensor F. And then you can construct polynomials made out of this object G inverse F. And these, in fact, will correspond to nonlinear generalizations of the mass term here. So you can think of the F, the second metric F, as some kind of G bar, basically. But the point is that in order to write any kind of non-derivative interaction, non-derivative self-interaction for the metric G, you need another spin 2 field, or you need another rank 2 tensor to construct polynomials of this sort. Now, theories of this sort are generically called massive gravity. That's a kind of mass potential. And then you may wonder what happens if you have a non-dynamical rank 2 tensor in your theory. And of course, it's desirable if this guy itself had its own dynamics. So then you think of having theories of two interacting spin 2 fields. One is G with a standard Einstein-Hilbert action. And then you also would like to add a kinetic term for this F. And a priori, you don't know what this kinetic term is. Now, long ago, people looked at this problem, and Isham Salam and Strati used a kinetic term for F, which again was given by the Einstein-Hilbert action. For no reason, it looks nice, you just write it down. The problem, however, is that both these theories generically have a ghost, as was shown by Bulwer and Deser in 72, so both these theories are unstable. So the main problem is to find interactions in kinetic terms in these actions which avoid the ghost problem. Now we can briefly look at this at the number of modes that these theories propagate. So at the linear, if you look at generic massive gravity, which in which you have a metric g mu nu and a fixed metric f mu nu, then you can construct the theory such that at the linear level you have five propagating modes, and that's your massive spin 2 field. However, at the nonlinear level, generically, you will have six modes, and the sixth mode is the Bulwer-Deser ghost. Similarly, in a generic bimetric theory, you can construct your theory such that at the linear level, you have five massive modes corresponding to the difference between the excitations of the G and F matrix, and two states corresponding to a massless mode. So in total, you will have seven modes. That's a massive spin 2 plus a massless spin 2. However, at the nonlinear level, you generically have eight modes, and the eighth mode is a ghost. Now, Bulwer and Deser argue that this ghost generically appears at the nonlinear level, so even if you design your theory such at the linear level, it's ghost-free, generically, at nonlinear, it will have a ghost. So since the ghost appears at a nonlinear level, you need to also show that the ghost is absent at a nonlinear level. So that's essentially a complication, because you have to do some kind of nonlinear analysis to show the absence of ghost. Now, the ghost problem has survived for a very long time, and the breakthrough essentially came with the work of Dhiram Gavadadze and Dhiram Gavadadze and Tolly, who in a decoupling limit managed to construct a potential, an interaction potential between G and F, and in that case, the F matrix was taken to be flat. And then in this decoupling limit, they could actually show that this massive gravity with this kind of potential is ghost-free, and also they had perturbative analysis in powers of H to some fourth order, and also proved that the ghost was absent there. So this was a major breakthrough in the field, which occurred in 2010. And the form of this potential was discussed yesterday by both Claudia and Shinji, so I will not discuss it now, but I will come to it later in a slightly different form. Okay. So for details, I refer to the talk by Claudia and Shinji. And of course, this construction was also based on earlier work by Criminelli, Nicolis, Papucci, and Trincherini earlier. Okay. So this was a major breakthrough in the field, which essentially was able to construct a massive theory of gravity, which was ghost-free, with a flat reference matrix using the decoupling limit. Now, there are other questions that are beyond the reach of the decoupling limit, which are of interest. And to address those questions, you need nonlinear methods. So I briefly review those questions. So first of all, the questions are, OK, so the questions are this. First of all, if you have this massive gravity potential, can you actually show that this potential is really ghost-free at the nonlinear level beyond the decoupling limit? And once you develop Hamiltonian methods to analyze the theory, you can actually show that this theory is indeed ghost-free to at a complete nonlinear level, so it propagates only five modes corresponding to a massive spin 2 field. The second question if this theory will remain ghost-free if the flat fiducial matrix eta is replaced by a generic fiducial matrix f mu nu. And then again, you can actually show that this theory still remains ghost-free at a complete nonlinear level. And of course, the next interesting question is if you can actually give dynamics to f mu nu in such a way that even with a dynamical f mu nu, the theory is ghost-free, and how the dynamics should look like. And again, the answer to that is positive, and I will discuss this point in some detail. And then you can also ask if you can actually generalize this construction from a theory of two interacting spin 2 fields to several interacting spin 2 fields, and this was done by Kurt and Rachel last year. Okay, so these are questions that you can ask, and you can actually answer them if you have nonlinear methods to analyze the theory, and the answer is positive. Okay, so that was a review of that was a very brief review of the recent developments. Now we look at the bimetric theory in more detail. We look at the structure of bimetric theory. Now, before that, let's have a digression. So I just remind you what elementary symmetric polynomials are. So if you have a matrix X with eigenvalues lambda 1 to lambda 4 in 4 dimensions, you can generalize this to any dimensions, then the elementary symmetric polynomials of the eigenvalues of X are defined as follows. E0 is 1, E1 is the sum of the eigenvalues, E2 is the product of 2 eigenvalues, E3 is the product of 3 eigenvalues, and E4 is the product of all eigenvalues, which is the determinant of X. This is the basic, simple notion of elementary symmetric polynomials. Now, it so happens that you can also write these polynomials in terms of the matrix itself, not its eigenvalues, but just the matrix X. So here, E0 is 1. E1 is just a trace of X, so the squared brackets here denote trace. E2 is half trace squared minus trace of X squared, and so on and so forth. And in 4 dimensions, you have up to E4, and beyond that, the remaining elementary symmetric polynomials vanish in 4 dimensions. Okay. So this is the simple definition of elementary symmetric polynomials of any matrix X. Now, it's well known that these elementary symmetric polynomials are connected to the notion of determinant. So if you have a matrix X and you evaluate the determinant of 1 plus X, then determinant of 1 plus X is simply the sum of elementary symmetric polynomials of X. That's a very simple relation between the determinant and the sum of elementary symmetric polynomials. Now, let's introduce the notion of a deformed determinant, simply in this way. You take the expression for the determinant and put 5 arbitrary coefficients in front of the ENs, the beta ends. They're just 5 arbitrary coefficients. Let me call that the deformed determinant, just to give it a name. Now, it so happens that the potential, the massive gravity potential that Deram et al. Had constructed, in fact, is simply this deformed determinant. It's the sum of elementary symmetric polynomials of this object with arbitrary coefficients. And this is a slight generalization of the potential that was constructed for massive gravity because it allows more general parameter values. And the main observation, one of the main observations of Deram et al., was that this potential is a function of a square root matrix. So you construct G inverse F as a matrix and then take the square root of a matrix, which is slightly tricky, but the potential is given in terms of this object. Okay, so that's the observation, that the massive gravity potential has this form. Now, once you write it in this form, then it becomes easy to do the Hamiltonian analysis and show the absence of ghost. Okay, and then in fact, you can also show that once you have this potential, then you can have an Einstein-Hilbert term for the matrix G. You can add this potential, and up to this part, you have massive gravity, but you can add a kinetic term for F, and it turns out that the correct ghost-free kinetic term for F is just another Einstein-Hilbert term for F. Now, of course, you can see that the kinetic terms here are completely symmetric. They have exactly the same form. So you would expect that this theory, if the theory is ghost-free, then this potential should also have interchange symmetry under interchanging F and G. And indeed, using these properties of elementary symmetric polynomials, you can easily show that the potential expressed as a function of G inverse F is the same as the potential expressed as a function of F inverse G. So you just interchange F and G, and you get exactly the same quantity, and you also have to replace the beta n by beta 4 minus n. So the potential has an exchange symmetry, and the theory is symmetric under the interchange of the two matrix F and G, provided you also interchange the parameters beta, the couplings, in the right way. And this is very important for the consistency of the theory as well as for what I'm going to say later. And then you can actually do a completely nonlinear Hamiltonian analysis of the system and show that this theory has 7 propagating modes and it has no Bulwer-Lazar ghost. And to show this, you essentially show that the theory has 2 constraints. There's a Hamiltonian constraint and then a secondary constraint. And these constraints essentially remove the ghost as well as the momentum canonically conjugate to it. Okay, so this is the biometric theory that we will be discussing, and it's a theory of two interacting spin two fields. Now you may ask, okay, if in nature I really had a spin two field that interacted with gravity in this way, and if I look at this, then so what is gravity here? You have two matrix G and F. Which one of them is gravity? Which one of them can you identify with gravity? So what is the real physical content of this theory if you really take it to be a theory of gravity in the presence of another spin two field? So for that, you have to do some further analysis. And that essentially is to, that analysis consists of studying the mass spectrum of my matrix theory. Okay, so to study the mass spectrum, you look at your action. Now I have written the action in D dimensions. You can do the analysis in D dimensions, but in practice I will be here I will be considering only four dimensions. And then you look at the equations of motion obtainable from this action. The equations of motion are the Einstein-Hilbert, the equation consists of the Einstein tensor for the matrix G, plus a contribution from the mass potential equal to some matter stress energy tensor that couples to G. And then you can have the, then you will have the same Einstein tensor for F with a contribution coming again from the mass potential to the F equation and a matter coupling to F. So these are the type of matter couplings that you can add to the theory, that is matter coupling to G and matter coupling to F independently. And this is consistent with the absence of ghost in the theory. Okay, so now you may ask some questions. The nonlinear analysis has told us that this theory has seven propagating modes. Then the question is, what are these seven modes? And if you look at the fluctuations of the two matrix G and F, when are these fluctuations good mass eigenstates in the sense of fierce Pauli mass? So when can you look at these fluctuations and say, oh, I see a fierce Pauli mass here, and this is my massive spin two field, this is my massless spin two field. In general, you cannot identify these fluctuations in terms of mass eigenstates in this theory, but around certain backgrounds, you can do that. So you want to find the mass spectrum. Then you can ask, in what sense is this a theory of massive spin two field interacting with gravity? Where is gravity here and where is this massive spin two field? So that's another question that you can ask and answer. And also if you want to use this as a theory of nature, then you would also like to characterize in some way deviations from GR, because you don't want GR to be violated in a big way. So you want to have some parameter to characterize deviations from GR. Okay. So to answer these questions, first we look at the question of mass spectrum, and we want to find backgrounds around which you have a nice mass spectrum. And it turns out that these backgrounds essentially are backgrounds where the two matrix are proportional to each other. Only around these backgrounds you have a mass spectrum with definite fierce Pauli mass structure. You can see that on general grounds. So if the two matrix are proportional to each other like this, then you plug this answers in the equation of motion, and the two equations for F and G then reduce to a single equation. Okay? They reduce to two equations. They look exactly the same except that they have two different cosmological constants. So the G equation becomes this equation with cosmological constant lambda G. The F equation becomes the same equation with cosmological constant lambda F. And of course, okay, and these cosmological constants are given in terms of the parameters beta of the theory, and this quantity C, which appeared here in our answers. Okay? And of course, these two equations are consistent only if the two cosmological constants are equal. So you have to equate the two cosmological constants. This is part of your equation of motion. When you equate the two cosmological constants, this actually gives you a polynomial equation for C. So the proportionality constant here is determined by this condition as a function of the parameters of the theory. Okay? So in any biometric theory, once you take this answer for the backgrounds, the proportionality constant is generically determined by this condition as a definite function of the parameters of the theory. Okay? This is a very important point. There is just one case when this quantity C is not determined, and that's very important for us, and we will come back to that. But we keep this in mind now, that the proportionality constant here is determined in terms of the parameters of the theory. There is no arbitrariness in this quantity in general. Okay? So these are very nice set of backgrounds, and you can also see that whenever you look at proportional backgrounds, then these backgrounds always essentially satisfy the Einstein-Hilbert equation. So at the background level, these solutions are indistinguishable from GR. The fluctuations will differ from GR, but at the background level, these solutions are exactly like GR, the proportional backgrounds. Okay, now you can look at fluctuations of the fields around these backgrounds, and then you can very easily see that one combination of the fluctuations, so this alpha here is the ratio of the Planck masses of the two theories. So alpha is just the ratio of the Planck masses of the two theories, basically. So this combination is a massless spin 2 field, and this combination, that's the difference between the fluctuations, is a massive spin 2 field. Okay? So these are your mass eigenstates, and this massive spin 2 field has a fierce Pauli mass that you can definitely compute in the theory. Okay? So this is the physical content of the theory, and you can also look at these fluctuations and actually extend them to nonlinear fields. Okay, now I will go a little fast through these things, through these other questions. So one question was, what is gravity in this theory? The naive expectation would be that the massless spin 2 field here, that this massless combination is really gravity. That's the naive expectation. And this massless fluctuation can be associated with this nonlinear field. I will not discuss the details. However, you can easily see that this massless field cannot be coupled to matter in a ghost-free way. This guy does not have ghost-free couplings to matter. So the massless field cannot be gravity, because it cannot couple in a ghost-free way to matter. Okay. So then the other fallback option is that one of the two matrix G or F is gravity. So if you take G to be gravity, then there's a massive spin 2 field that you can construct in this way. And these two are not, so this M is a mass eigenstate, but your gravity is not a mass eigenstate. So in this picture, in this model, gravity is always a combination of a massless fluctuation and a massive fluctuation, like neutrino oscillations. So the interaction states are not the same as propagation states. So gravity is always a combination of massive and massless modes. And how much massive or how much massless content you have in gravity depends on the ratio of the parameters. If G is the graviton, if G is the gravitational matrix that couples to matter, then if the Planck mass of F goes to infinity, G becomes massive gravity. Then G becomes completely massive. But if the Planck mass of F is much smaller than the Planck mass of G, which looks rather natural, Planck mass is rather large for us, then G is mostly massless. So in this is the limit which is opposite to the massive gravity limit, and in this limit, a bimetric theory, the matrix G mu in a bimetric theory behaves much closer to the matrix in GR than as compared to the matrix in massive gravity. So this is a limit where the theory should look rather close to GR. And you can make it as close to GR as you want by tuning the parameters of the theory. Yes? Sorry? This one? So this is MF by MG. You mean alpha? Yeah. Yep, exactly. That's right. So exactly. So the massive gravity limit is when alpha goes to infinity. Okay. And the massless, the limit in which G is mostly massless is when alpha goes to zero, basically. Yeah. So you have to do your scaling carefully, but then you see that these statements are correct. Okay. And you can also see that the massive spin 2 field, the vacuum expectation value of the massive spin 2 field characterizes deviations from GR. So whenever the VEV of the massive spin 2 field is zero, your classical solution coincides with GR. Whenever the VEV of the massive spin 2 field is away from zero, you get deviations from GR. So the deviations from GR in this case are parameterized by the VEV of the massive spin 2 field. This is not the only parameter, but this is one of the parameters. Okay. So the important thing for us was that we now have a notion of mass spectrum, and we have a notion of proportional backgrounds. Okay? Now you can do many things with this theory. You can look at classical solutions. You can try to fit to data and all that. But we are interested now in slightly more abstract properties of the theory, which are interesting, as you will see, for other reasons. And that is the notion of partial masslessness. Okay, so what's that? So it has been known for a long time, say 20 years, that if you look at the Fierce-Pauli theory, and if your background matrix is a De Sitter space, or in general an Einstein space satisfying this equation, then the massive Fierce-Pauli theory can develop an extra symmetry provided the mass and the cosmological constant satisfy this relation. So this is called the Higuchi bound. So when you are on the Higuchi bound, then in this theory, your equation of motion becomes invariant under a transformation like this. So xi is a gauge parameter here, is a gauge function. And the first piece is like a coordinate transformation, like a general coordinate transformation. And the second piece is like a conformal transformation. And this specific combination of the transformations leave this equation invariant. Okay, so the theory develops a new gauge symmetry. The outcome of this gauge symmetry is that one of the five propagating modes of this H is gauged away. One of the five propagating modes becomes a gauge mode, and you can gauge it away. So the theory actually, on the Higuchi bound, the theory contains not five propagating modes, but four propagating modes. And this, okay, the mode that is removed is the Helesti zero mode of the spin 2 field. And this genetically is the guy that creates problems in many situations. So this is a good thing. Okay. Now, this, of course, is a very special situation. You look at linearized Fierce-Pauli theory. You look at De Sitter backgrounds, or in general, Einstein backgrounds. And you see the symmetry. So there is no strong reason to expect that this symmetry could actually mean something more than this and could have a significance beyond these very special backgrounds. However, you can still be optimistic and say, okay, can I actually find a completely nonlinear theory which exhibits this symmetry irrespective of any background? Okay? Can the symmetry actually exist in a nonlinear theory or not? Now, this, of course, is a difficult question to answer if you don't really have a nonlinear theory. But since we have nonlinear theories, we can look at them. So in the context of massive gravity, it was studied by Claudia. I will briefly mention that later. So the question is this. So if you have a nonlinear theory with this partial massless symmetry, then this really means a theory of spin 2 field with a gauge invariance. Okay? And this, is, of course, is nice. You would like to have gravity as a theory of a spin 2 field. You would like a version of it with an extra gauge invariant. You may expect that it protects you against quantum corrections and all that. So the question is, does it exist independent of backgrounds? That can you really have a completely nonlinear theory with this extra symmetry or not? And that would be the subject of our talk. And there has been a lot of controversy here. And I will show you that most of that controversy is completely irrelevant. Okay. So what we do is that we try to identify a specific bimetric theory as the only possible candidate for this nonlinear PM theory. Okay, there is no other candidate. I can show you that this is the only possible candidate. If this guy is the nonlinear PM theory, if the nonlinear PM theory exists in this framework, it has to be this theory. If it does not exist, it's not there. But I will try to convince you that actually it does exist. Okay, so how do we identify this unique theory, which is the only possible theory that could potentially have a PM symmetry? We look at the bimetric theory around proportional backgrounds, where we have a definite mass spectrum. And we look at the massive mode. And this massive mode, of course, we know satisfies the Fierst-Pauli equation. So when we put this theory on the Higuchi bound, this massive mode will have the symmetry. Okay? That's trivial. That's just not, I'm not saying anything new. This is just what we had from the linearized Fierst-Pauli theory. And since the linearized Fierst-Pauli theory sits inside bimetric theory, we can always have this. This constraint is not very strict because this mass and cosmological constant, they depend on 5, 6 parameters. So you can always satisfy this constraint quite easily in bimetric theory. So this is not a problem. The question now is this. Can we start with this and actually argue that, can we get information about nonlinear behavior of the theory from here or not? Okay. So what did I do? So the procedure is extremely simple, okay? You know that you have the symmetry in the theory, or assume that you have the symmetry in the theory, where the massless mode does not transform, the massive mode transforms under this very well-known PM gauge transformation. But the massive mode and the massless mode are expressed in terms of fluctuation delta F and delta G. These are the basic objects in the bimetric theory. So from these transformations, you can easily construct a transformation of the F and G fluctuations. So you can get a transformation of these guys. Each one of them looks more or less like that. Okay? And then you can look at the constant gauge transformations when this gauge parameter is constant. And these are transformations that keep your de Sitter backgrounds invariant, because we know PM symmetry around de Sitter backgrounds. So if you constrain yourself around this, then you or safely within the Sitter backgrounds where you know the theory. And in this case, you can actually integrate out these transformations from infinitesimal transformations to finite transformations. The final effect of that essentially is that these transformations, this special subset of the transformations, they move your backgrounds from initial values to final values. Okay, they just scale your backgrounds. If you look at your new backgrounds, they are again proportional, but with a different proportionality constant. And the proportionality constant becomes gauge dependent. So if your theory had a partial massless symmetry, then the proportionality constant between the two matrix is a gauge parameter. It cannot be fixed. Now, this contradicts our earlier discussion that this proportionality constant was actually fixed by this condition. We could actually determine it uniquely. So that means that the only way that you can have a symmetry in this theory is that this polynomial equation does not determine the constant C. That's the only possibility. And if you look at that equation, it is indeed a polynomial in C with coefficients. So when the coefficients of each power of C is zero separately, then C is not determined. So those are the conditions between the parameters of the bimetric theory. So once you have this condition, beta 1, beta 3, 0, and beta 0, beta 2, and beta 4 are all related to each other. So essentially, you can think of beta 2 as the only parameter in the theory. So out of 5 parameters, you are left with just one parameter. And this is the PM theory. So with these values of parameters, you get a definite bimetric theory, and this is the only possible theory that could have a nonlinear PM symmetry.
Bimetric.
Of course, okay. So I think the beauty of this argument is that this construction that I described, this can be applied to any theory. Given any theory that reduces the Fierst-Pauli, that contains Fierst-Pauli theory at the linear level, you can always apply this construction and find the unique PM theory within that framework. Right now, we don't know of anything else, so this is the only one. Maybe you can apply it to multimetric theories. You can apply this formalism. Okay. So this is the only theory. Yeah, and if this theory is really there, then instead of then it should have an extra gauge invariance. Here I have not looked at the complete gauge invariance. I have looked only at the at a part of the gauge invariance. So if this theory is really there, then instead of 7 propagating modes, it should have 6 propagating modes. Okay, and that's what I will try to now argue. Okay, you can also do some further checks and see that it actually works with known facts about partial masses theories. Okay, now let's take a digression and go to conformal gravity. Yes? Yeah. So this is the global part of that.
Yes.
Yeah. So this follows by using only a part of the gauge symmetry. There's also the other part which is global, which is the local part. No, but the global part you have. I showed you that the global part is rather trivial to realize. It's the local part that's more important. So now I will. So I have shown you. We have actually shown in detail in one of the papers listed there that the global part can be automatically realized, and you can actually construct gauge invariant objects out of it. So the global part is completely well understood. The local part is a problematic one. And now I will show you that the local part also, in fact, exists. Okay, so this is generic higher derivative gravity up to 4 derivatives. This is the square of the Weil tensor. You have the Einstein-Hilbert term. And it's well known that this theory has a massless spin 2 pole and a massive spin 2 pole, but the massive pole is actually a ghost. Okay, that's well known. However, now if you remove the 2 lower terms and just keep the Weil squared part of the action, then you get conformal gravity. This theory is invariant under scalings of the matrix, under Weil scalings. It has an equation of motion which is the Bach tensor equal to 0. This is a special tensor called the Bach tensor. It's a 4 derivative equation of motion. And it's known that this theory has 6 modes, a massless spin 2 and 4 ghost modes. Okay? This has been studied around flat space, around curved backgrounds, recently by Maldacena, around distributed backgrounds. Okay, so the content of this theory looks very much like PM theory, like partial masses theory. It has 6 modes instead of 7 modes, but it has a ghost. Sorry? Here? No. Only 1/3 R squared. This is a different way of writing the square of the Weil tensor. It's only the square of the Weil tensor. Yeah. Okay, now I have to go fast. Okay, so the important thing now is that we can actually show that the equations of motion in bimetric theory, you have 2 equations of motion for F and G. You can solve them perturbatively in powers of derivatives, and at the lowest order in perturbation theory, you exactly get the equation of motion for conformal gravity. Okay, for the PM theory, not in general. So, okay, so I define the Schouten's tensor like that in terms of R mu nu, so it's a curvature tensor. And then using the G mu nu equation of motion, you get an expression for F. So you solve one of your equations perturbatively for F mu nu, plug it back in the F mu nu equation, you get this. So this equation now is a combination of the 2 equations of motion and bimetric theory. And this is exactly the Bach tensor plus corrections. So in the low curvature limit, your equation of motion in the partially masses bimetric theory coincides with the equation of motion in conformal gravity. So it definitely has 6 propagating modes, not 7. Okay? And around simple backgrounds like flat space and all that, you can argue that the corrections do not change the pole structure of the propagator. So this has 6 modes. Okay? And the invariance is the scaling. Okay? So, okay, then you get higher derivative corrections. Okay, so very good. So you know that now there's a relation between biometric theory and conformal gravity in a perturbative expansion. In the low curvature limit, the equations of motion are the same. And this is very important that the equivalence is definite for the equations of motion. So it's a real equivalence at the low curvature limit. And now, moreover, you can start with this wild transformation of conformal gravity and construct a transformation of F mu nu using the relationship between G and F that we have. And from here, you can immediately obtain the transformation of the massive mode, and it's exactly the partial massless gauge transformation. Okay? And here we had nowhere we used the fact that we were working with Einstein backgrounds or anything like that. This is a completely general theory without any reference to any background. We just did a derivative expansion of biometric theory. Okay? So this definitely shows that there is a lot in this theory. The question is, okay, so you can interpret this in different ways, that conformal gravity is a low curvature limit of partially massless biometric equation of motion. This is definitely true. Conversely, biometric theory is a ghost-free completion of conformal gravity. Conformal gravity has ghosts. Biometric theory does not have ghosts, so it's a completion. The important question is, does the symmetry survive at higher orders? We looked at this at lower orders in the derivative expansion. It was there. But can we show that the symmetry exists at higher orders or not? The answer is yes. Okay? And I can actually sketch that for you, depending on how much time I have. Oh, I have 6 minutes by my watch. I'll finish. I am the last part now. Okay. So the last part, when I said that the symmetry actually exists, this is not yet written up, but I will tell you how the proof works. It's extremely simple. Okay, but even without that, the fact that there is a map between partially massless biometric theory and conformal gravity in this derivative expansion itself is very, I think it's still very interesting. And the fact that you actually recover a lot of stuff about PM theories from this correspondence without any reference to De Sitter backgrounds. Okay. Now, yeah, so some debate. So there has been some arguments whether this is, whether you can actually have a nonlinear PM theory or not. For the massive gravity, the arguments were given by Claudia, Kurt, Rachel, and Andrew. And also, there were some arguments by Deser, Sandura, and Waldron. So these arguments essentially indicate that you cannot have PM, nonlinear PM theories within the massive gravity framework. Okay. However, these constructions do not apply to biometric theories. Now, the first set of authors realized that the construction does not apply to biometric theories. The second set of authors did not realize that for a long time. And they made very strange claims in their papers, which are very strange. Until finally we got a mail from Deser saying that, of course, yes, he believes that the construction do not apply to biometric theories, but of course they did not change the papers. So, yeah. And then the second thing is, there are also some arguments against nonlinear PM symmetry in biometric theory. Now, there are no arguments of this sort. There are papers by Deser, Waller, and Sandora. There are arguments in the massive gravity papers, but they don't apply. And then there's a recent paper that claims that there is no PM symmetry in biometric theory, but they actually take our arguments, they quote our paper completely in the wrong way. They have not even read our paper. So while I just told you that the correspondence between PM biometric theory and conformal gravity at the level of equations of motion, they claim that this correspondence is not at the level of equations of motion, it's at the level of action. So it's not a real equivalence. And we clearly discuss this in our paper. We said that no, this is not at the level of action, it's at the level of equations of motion. So they have not read the paper, and they are writing papers. So this paper is, so many people have asked me about this, it's completely bullshit, okay? There is not a single correct argument in this paper, okay? It's very sad to see that well-known people actually can write papers like that, okay? They, They quote our paper like 15 times, and not a single quotation is correct. Okay, so they have just not read our paper. Anyway, okay. So there is no argument against biometric theory. Okay, at this level, it may or may not exist, but there is no argument so far. Okay, however, now I will tell you that it actually does exist. Okay, and that's the argument. So when I showed you that you have this conformal symmetry at the low curvature limit, you can actually start that, and there's a bootstrap mechanism. You can very easily work that out, that starting from the lowest order of conformal scaling of the matrix, you can order by order and derivatives construct the gauge transformation. In a way that ensures that the equations of motion are completely invariant. Okay. This, in fact, the construction turned out to be much simpler than we had expected, and it's rather easy to show. Okay. So it's just this. You just work with redefined variables, just rescale your g mu nu and f mu nu with alpha, which was the ratio of the Planck masses, to simplify life. And then you find that the g and f equations of motion become exactly the same. Okay. This is the G equation of motion, and the F equation of motion is obtained exactly by GF interchange. That's it. You don't interchange any parameters, nothing else. That just replace G by F, and you get the other equation of motion. Okay? And this happens only for the PM biometric theory. You cannot do this for any other biometric theory. Okay? Now, the argument is extremely simple. The first equation, the G equation, has a trivial symmetry. You change G and find the corresponding transformation of F to cancel the transformation of G. Okay? This is trivial. You can always do that, especially because from this equation, we have a solution for F in terms of G, so you can always use that. So this is a trivial statement. It's a trivial invariance of the G equation of motion. You change G, find the transformation of F designed to cancel that transformation. You can always find that. The question is this. Can this also be a symmetry of the second equation or not? Okay. That's the non-trivial part. Generically, it will not be a symmetry of the second equation. However, the second equation itself has a trivial symmetry because the second equation is obtained from the first one by FG interchange. If you take these transformations, and in these transformations you make the GF interchange, of course you get a trivial symmetry of the second equation. Okay. So the first equation has a trivial symmetry. The second equation, again, has a trivial symmetry, which is obtained from this guy just by interchanging F and G. Okay? So you have two trivial symmetries. And if it so happens that the variation of F obtained here and the variation of F obtained here are equal, then indeed your equations will be invariant. Both equations will be invariant under the same set of symmetry transformations. Okay? This is a very strong condition. So if you actually start from a generic biometric theory, this itself puts you automatically on the partial masses parameter set. Okay? And the question is, if you can show this, then you have definitely shown that the two equations are invariant under the same set of transformations. And one can actually show this very easily. So one can actually start from the conformal transformation of G, and using the equations, construct the transformation of F order by order in such a way that you finally get a transformation that automatically satisfies this condition. Then you go back and check all your consistency conditions. So this is the last slide. This is how it works. This was the transformation that kept the conformal gravity equation invariant. So this must be the starting point of your transformation. Okay? And from this, you can iteratively construct a transformation delta F that satisfies this property. Okay? At the two derivative level, this is how it works. So I showed you the two derivative level transformation earlier. Which was this. So at the two derivative level, starting from this transformation for G, which was the symmetry of the conformal gravity equation, I obtained this transformation for F, and the combination of the two gave me the correct transformation for the massive field, which was the PM transformation. Now, if I take these two transformations and I can make them symmetric in G and F, these are not symmetric in G and F. I can add terms here and correct them so that at this order in derivatives, I get a transformation which is equivalent to these guys, but looks symmetric. And that actually is this. These are transformations. Okay? They look exactly symmetric and the GF interchange. Okay? So this is the two derivative level. So at the two derivative level, this is the transformation. You can check that this is in fact indeed the correct transformation for the PM theory. So this is at the two derivative level. So this is the first step in the induction process. Then you can also show very easy. You can just extend this to any order if you want. It's obvious that it will work. But you can generically show that if such a construction works at 2n derivative level, it will always work at 2n plus 2 derivative level. So you can iteratively construct this transformation step by step in powers of derivatives. Okay? So there's a very easy and simple induction proof that the symmetry exists. Okay? And that's my conclusion. That within the set of biometric theories, one had been identified as a possible candidate for a partial massless. One had been identified as a possible candidate for a nonlinear PM theory, and this guy is equivalent to conformal gravity equation of motion at the lowest level, so it indeed has a corresponding symmetry. And you can actually show order by order that the symmetry exists to any order. So there's a perturbative proof that this specific partially massless biometric theory indeed is partially massless. It has a gauge symmetry, and therefore it has 6 rather than 7 propagating modes. The mode which is removed is a helicity zero mode, which generically is problematic. So there are, for example, there are instabilities in these theories for various classical solutions, and those guys are all because of this mode, which is problematic. And for this PM theory, that mode is removed. And moreover, as I told you, this theory now definitely is a ghost-free completion of conformal gravity. Conformal gravity defined in the standard way has lots of nice properties because it has conformal invariants. You can define GR in some way through conformal gravity, through breaking of conformal symmetry and all that. But it has ghosts because 4 of the modes in conformal gravity are ghost-like. However, in the biometric setup, those 4 modes are not ghosts. They're actually Helder modes. So, yeah, so I think this is very interesting, but we have to still understand it better. Thank you.
So this is a really interesting new result, and there are bound to be a lot of questions, but we're running a little over time, so maybe we'll just have a couple of quick questions and then save the rest for the break.
I'll start with the 2-in-1 question. I actually had 2 questions, but I'll combine them into one. Maybe you said this at some point, but I'm a little confused about how you add matter in this theory.
Yeah.
And in particular, if you couple matter to the G mode,
yeah,
what prevents at loop level, you know, these couplings from being generated to the F mode? And if they are generated, how do you preserve the principle of equivalence?
I don't know anything about the quantum theory here. So the first attempt is to get the classical theory right. So from my point of view, once I get the classical theory right, then maybe I will bother about the quantum theory. So I don't know anything. Claudia can probably tell you something about the quantum theory. I cannot tell you that.
You see some kind of symmetry that would prevent these couplings from being generated? Because this is something you could see at the level of the action that would, you know, protect the principle of equivalence.
So my point of view is that biometric theory, the way that we discuss it now, this in fact is a more sophisticated version of Broca theory. Now Broca theory we know is fine, but you need Higgs mechanism to finally make it completely consistent. So I would say that this guy, whatever nice thing we see about it, they are nice, they are okay, but finally we will need some nicer formulation of the theory, which will give you this stuff through some kind of Higgs mechanism. And that theory will probably have extra fields. For example, the symmetry I discussed, the PM symmetry, the way we see it is an on-shell symmetry. Maybe it gets promoted to off-shell symmetry in that case. I don't know. So I don't take this theory to be the final point. It has nice properties, but I think most probably it has to be embedded in some nicer setup.
Okay, just in continuation of that nicer setup. So Maldacena's point was that conformal gravity in flat space is just ordinary Einstein gravity in ADS.
No, it's not.
With these 4 modes removed.
With the 4 modes removed, yes. Yeah.
Now, if you say that this theory is some kind of, you know, completion of conformal gravity. Can you phrase it in an EDS CFT setup as some kind of extension of Einstein gravity in EDS? Can you phrase this in, you know?
Okay, so conformal
gravity of those two modes is equivalent to Einstein gravity.
Yeah, but in conformal gravity, you remove those two modes because they are ghosts. Here, you don't have to remove them. They are not ghosts. They are okay. So if you retain them, they will give you deviations from Einstein theory, but they are not problematic. Okay, maybe I got you wrong.
We better move on to the next speaker. So let's thank Fawad again.
Thank you.